On today's episode,
The Bardo and the Tibetan Book of the Dead,
Timothy Leary harshes our mellow,
and Javier defends Eddie Murphy's magnum opus, Boogie in the Butt. Yeah, yeah. I would say I'm definitely most interested in the worthless areas.
Yeah. Welcome to What's My Thesis. I'm Javier Proenza.
And this is Seth Lauer. We're Los Angeles-based artists who meet every week to share the answers we found to the questions we have.
Join us as we explore and expand our worldviews through research and ask, what's my thesis? Well, it's your episode. Have fun. I'm going to start sabotaging, making more work. How are you doing, bro?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm good. I like your posture. It's very, very, it seems like you should have a piano in front of you because you're sitting on a piano benchy kind of thing.
Yeah, it's true. I've got the refrigerator on my back, so if it gets tiring, then I can always support
just
myself on
lean
the
lean back and get fridge. Away from the microphone and make terrible audio.
The fridge, which is getting progressively warmer throughout the episode.
Oh, yeah. If you warm it up with your back, I'm going to be upset. I had amazing ice cream the other day, though, because I forgot to turn it back on after we recorded.
For like an entire day?
Yeah. But luckily it says wait 24 hours for the new temperature to set in. So it was still cold during that whole process.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Impressive. What kind of ice cream?
Just vanilla. But it was for a pecan pie that I had for Thanksgiving. It's not.
A la mode?
Yeah. I don't just go vanilla ice cream. Let me just eat it by itself.
Okay, well that's... I'm relieved to hear that.
I was worried for a second there that I might have actually, like, that you're going to be like, what's wrong with that?
Anything else happened this week?
Oh my God. I don't know if I should get into this, but I watched Chappie and I watched the British Bake Off or the Great British Baking Show, which I know I'm super late to the party on that. But Chappie made me fucking weep, dude.
This is the robot?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
Obviously, it's not about the movie, but I don't know where all those feelings came from. They were just there. It's nice when you can just have a purge like that and you don't have to actually address them. Uh-huh. You're just like, it had been a long time. I'm not going to say because then it'll sound like I'm a tough guy. Be like, it's been like a certain amount of years. But,
since you wept that hard?
Yeah, it's that hard. Yeah.
Or at all?
Yeah, at all. I mean, I've done a little choke up here and there, usually in movies, but. And then the British Bake Off fucking finished me off.
You're crying during that?
Yeah, at the end of the first season. Yeah, because they're just so that, like, I've heard people say these things that I'm about to say about the show, but they really are just competing with themselves, and they're really, really hard on themselves sometimes. And it's like there are these little stories of personal triumph. But then when I got to season two, I was like, who are these fucking new people? Get out of here. I don't like, you know, like it's so abrupt. You get so close to them. I mean, I know that I'm going to get into the season as well. Yeah. I already started to, but as soon as that was done, I was like, I was all teary eyed and I was like, dude, I'm done. I'm done with this.
Yeah, is that just something about human nature that you hate everyone new and then...
Well, I mean, there's a thing that on that show, there's definitely in the first few episodes, there's definitely people you want gone who've kind of ruined the party for you. And you're just like, oh, God, get out of here, dude. Just lose already.
I'm sure that's intentional.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm learning a lot about baking. I have an oven. We're actually... recording right in front of my oven.
Almost inside the oven.
We could bake a mic right now. We could just make this a baking podcast and then we could describe.
Let's call it Hot Pockets.
Yeah.
Or Totino's Pizza Rolls.
Totino's Pizza
Rolls. Podcast.
I think you mentioned today that you have a long episode.
Yeah, this is a pretty beefy one, so maybe we can just jump into it.
Yeah, we'll take a little break, just so we have an excuse to make a song to put into here.
Sounds good.
All right. Back, and Seth is going to share with us his topic, which I don't know what it is, but I see a book in front of me.
I see two books,
yeah. Should I say them or should I wait?
We can say them. Yeah, there's actually other books referenced, but yeah, I'll be pulling from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which was kind of edited slash, well, yeah, I guess it's safe to say edited by W.Y. Evans Wentz. Which came out originally, I think, in 1927.
Is it translated by him, or...?
No, it was translated by this Tibetan guy that he was connected with.
But he had no sense of he was just too wordy of a translation? And this guy edited it for him?
Or does... No, not like that. I mean, he wrote, you know, like a whole commentary.
Okay.
So we'll get into it. It's a little controversial, actually. But the other book is Lincoln and the Bardo by George Saunders, which... is the first novel by the fiction writer George Saunders, which came out maybe like a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy,
historical fiction.
Yeah. Okay. So he's pulling a lot of references from nonfiction records and books about the Lincoln family.
Okay.
But then he's mixing them together.
The Lincoln family.
Abraham Lincoln's family. Yeah. So that's it's all mixed together with
D. Lincoln. Yeah, it's okay. You're not being dummy.
The president.
It's a fair assumption, Javier. Okay. You're in the right ballpark.
The one with the hat.
Yeah.
Okay. The president Abraham Lincoln who wore the hat, not the other president Lincoln.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So kind of break the ice here, I thought I would just ask, what's your favorite movie about Tibet?
Can I say Baraka? Because it's the only movie that I know that has anything to do in Tibet.
Sorry, what movie?
Baraka. It's one of those like Kaukazi kind of movies or whatever those.
No idea.
Oh my god. Then we're hopelessly going to struggle to figure out what they're actually called. Baraka, I know for sure, is called Baraka, but there are these movies made by. This guy who he just has footage and music, and it's all very rhythmic and sort of meditative. And so there's some scenes in it where you see Tibetan monks that sweep the path in front of them so that they don't step on insects and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Oh, I think I know what you're talking about now.
And then there's there's two more.
Yeah. That Philip Glass soundtrack for some.
Probably it sounds like it could be. I mean,
sounds.
I'm still surprised at how much Danny Elfman has his fingers in still.
Yeah,
he's all over the place in movies like right now.
Yeah, he's like a sound guy, like a music.
Yeah, he did, I think, the Star Wars stuff.
Okay.
And yeah, anyway.
I was expecting something more like the Golden Child or the Little Buddha.
The Golden Child is a good one. Yeah, that was probably my first exposure to Tibet, I think.
Yeah.
With him spinning those, the prayer wheels or whatever they are.
Yeah, like rapping while he's like spinning.
Yeah.
Give me the knife. Yeah.
That was a good movie.
You know, the thing
is... Does it hold up?
I went back and watched some clips just because, I don't think it's good enough. I like Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's funny, but, you know, I think he got away with things in the 80s that you really can't get away with now.
Racially I don't know if you, tense?
Not just racially, but a lot of homophobic stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he actually recorded a song.
Well, then he also got arrested for that. Wait, sorry. Hey, sorry, I cut you off. But you got me on a tangent about the homophobic thing.
He got arrested for that?
He got arrested for pulling over or for taking over a transvestite prostitute.
Oh.
And then he was... it was actually his reasoning sounded very plausible because it's one of those things that you hear, oh, he did that. Yeah, that sounds about right. But he was like, I saw a woman on the street. I didn't want her to be left alone. Nice misdirect there, huh? Not plausible at all.
Well, that's cool. I don't know. It's curious. The song that he recorded is all about putting different things in your butt.
Oh, yeah.
You know
boogie
song?
In
yeah,
the song? Yeah, boogie in the butt. Butt, okay. Butt, boogie in your butt. Yeah, dude, that shit is fucking... That's a classic. I don't know how homophobic that is, though.
Well, but then a lot of the stand-up and even...
No, the stand-up is homophobic, the, yeah. But that song, I think, is hilarious.
It's hard to tell. It's a funny song.
It's yeah.
It's only in the context of the
it's
stand-up,
a song but... where somebody tries to convince him to put stuff in his butt, and then he gets convinced, and he's like, put a telephone in your butt, pull an alligator in your butt. I said, see ya later. In your butt. So anyway, Tibet.
Oh, you just ruined. I was gonna play a clip of Keanu Reeves as Siddhartha, but oh. There's no way it can top that. I'll still play the clip of yeah. Keanu Reeves, but
Keanu Reeves and Siddhartha. It's probably it's good in some way.
It's pretty good. So anyway, getting back
wait,
to...
Wait, what fucking movie? Is that 7 Years in Tibet?
No, that's Brad Pitt.
Oh, okay.
This
that
is...
was the first movie that popped into my head about Tibet.
Which I haven't seen.
Seen it. Yeah.
This is The Little Buddha.
The Little Buddha, okay.
So anyway, what we're kind of getting at is that there's a lot of mythology and romanticization of Tibet. About the mysteries of Tibet as this kind of like pure place where, you know, this unspoiled place where
are you gonna ruin Tibet for us? Is that the plan today?
Yeah, totally.
They're actually rapist Nazis from outer space. What if we become that?
That's
podcast?
Actually not too far off.
I love it. I love it when I stumble on shit.
So what got me thinking about this...
Wait, they're racist Nazis rapists?
No.
Okay.
Let's just be clear. No, but but there, this book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is, let's say, inspired by this book of Theosophy, which has...
Define Theosophy for me, just so that I have a refresher.
Okay.
Did I just put you on the spot?
I was planning on getting to it, but since you asked, it's this kind of like mix of religion and philosophy that is very interested in... harvesting common qualities of different myths throughout time in the world.
Okay.
With the belief that there's some kind of common original source.
So it is a study. It's a course of study.
It's like a pseudoscience, but, you know, it's continued to this day. There's actually world headquarters in Pasadena.
Well, tells you about... I was, you know, it's not like Europe. I'm sorry, did I shit on your hometown?
Wait.
No, I was like, it's just disappointing that the center for anything is in Pasadena.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
Like, especially having to do with the study of religion, I would expect it to be like somewhere in Germany.
Yeah, but...
In the building that Galileo...
We're getting really off tangent, but like, there's this whole great history of the occult stuff in Pasadena, like relating to the Scientology guy and the you know JPL like L. Ron Hubbard and like these connections to anyway this is okay. I was gonna just say that the reason that I was interested in this topic I approached it from the perspective of George Saunders.
Okay,
so this book is called Lincoln and the Bardo, which is sort of about the death of Lincoln's son.
So we're not doing something about Lincoln or the Bardo.
It's mostly focused on the Bardo. So
the Bardo is a what?
The Bardo is in popular terms.
When I glanced at your paper, I saw Bardo, and it wasn't until now that I realized that there was a "the" in front of it, and so I thought it was a dude. And so the Bardo now is amazing as a person.
Just as a nickname?
just as a guy, like, what does that guy look like?
Bardo. Yeah, he seems kind of tough. Like,
I would say more like the dude, but
I love George Saunders. He's this great short story writer. Have you read any of his stuff? Has a lot of humor. It's very inventive. It kind of deals with surprising, sometimes futuristic scenarios, not always. So anyway, like I said, this is his first novel, and I listened to the audiobook of this. Structurally, it's very choppy. Like, there's a lot of different characters and a lot of different sources and citations, and many of those are actually, you know, they're printed in the book, and so you get these little chunks. But read as an audiobook, you're constantly getting these sources and citations, really making it not flow very well. But the great thing about it is, well, maybe now it's problematic because of Jeffrey Tambor's thing, but so
he was one of the... What did he do?
He was supposed to have...
But I mean, come on, it's fucking Jeffrey Tambor. Of course he was a fucking, like, he's such a big personality. Of course he was, like, over the top, you know? I mean, not that that makes it okay. Like, I'm not saying at all that that makes it okay.
You're just not surprised.
I'm just so not surprised. Okay.
Well, I liked him. I went to his unveiling on the Walk of Fame, his star.
Really?
Unveiling, yeah.
It would be the same as if you told me Rip Torn was a sleazebag. I'm like, yeah, I know. Wow.
Not much confidence in Jeffrey Tambor. Okay. Well, so I took some quotes here from an interview he did on Bookworm. Just asking him why he used Bardo in the title and not something like Limbo or Purgatory, which would be a more familiar
term
concept for Western readers, right?
So this is a Tibetan version. Bardo is a Tibetan version of Purgatory.
Not specifically Tibetan. There are some parts of Buddhism have the Bardo incorporated, and some schools of Buddhism don't. There are some fractures within Buddhism, some schools that stick more to original Buddhist teachings and some that have accepted later things. And this book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, is based on the Bardo Total, which was written in the 8th century. So anyway, he says that he used the Bardo in the title to keep death non-static and remind us that we don't know what it is. So it's a little destabilizing for the reader to approach it. A lot of this is based in the afterlife. So it's Lincoln's son, Willie, after he dies, trying to navigate the move to heaven, I guess.
Okay.
But for the moment, he doesn't want to leave. And so he's kind of stuck in this limbo or this Bardo between life and the next life or afterlife, whatever that means.
Because he can't cope with
He can't cope with leaving. Yeah. And so there's this whole cast of characters in the Bardo who have never left. And many of them are kind of like CD characters. So a lot of the humor in the book comes from this cast, who are all read by, like, you know, Tambor and like Miranda July and different people. He says that although the characters live in the cemetery, he doesn't think of them as ghosts. He thinks of them as energy leftovers, and they only stay there by repetition of certain narratives. They're essentially reduced to those repeated actions, just by sheer force of repetition. So this is a big thing in the Bardo Total, or the Book of the Dead, that your worldly actions and concerns are magnified in the Bardo, in the afterlife. So they become kind of manifested based on the way that you lived and your thought processes in life, the things that you're obsessed with, the things that you...
So can you give me an example of like something that would happen to you
in
the Bardo?
Yeah, we'll get there. It's specific examples, but whether you have a positive experience or a negative, it's really based on how you have trained yourself in life to look at things. So if there are manifestations of demons, that's coming straight from your head.
Okay. All right. So you're going to give me examples.
Yeah. All right. But first, I actually want to read just a sample of this book by Saunders, which hopefully won't get us in copyright trouble.
Deion Saunders.
Yes, the two-sport superstar Deion Saunders.
Dude was busy, man. It was
and now
shoes.
He's like it's a TV shoes. Host too, right?
Is he?
I think, I want to say maybe, but I'm not sure.
Maybe.
He was one of my favorites.
Really?
Number 21, yeah.
Yeah, he was the only reason I cared about the White Sox.
Was he on the White Sox?
Wasn't he?
I don't know.
No, he was a... Deion Sanders was Detroit Lions and...
No. No, he was Falcons. Atlanta Falcons.
We're going to totally cut all this out.
I still have 12 pages here. You see?
I don't know, man. You got to hustle. It's a 7-episode section.
Okay, so... His form, as sometimes happens to those about to go, began flickering between the various selves he had been in the previous place. Purple newborn, squalling naked infant, jelly-faced toddler, feverish boy on sick bed. Then, with no change in size at all, i.e. while still child-sized, he displayed his various future forms, forms he had, alas, never succeeded in attaining. Nervous young man in wedding coat, naked husband, wet-groined with recent pleasure, young father leaping out of bed to light a candle at a child's cry, grieving widower, hair gone white, Ben ancient fellow with an ear trumpet, athwart a stump, swatting at flies, all the while seeming quite innocent of these alterations. Oh, it was nice, he said sadly, so nice there, but we can't go back to how we were. All we can do is what we should. Then, drawing a deep breath, closing his eyes, he went. The lad went. Never before had Mr. Volman or I been so proximate to the matter light-blooming phenomenon and its familiar but always bone-chilling fire sound. The resulting explosion knocked us off our feet. Okay, so one reason I wanted to read this passage is because you get to this repeated concept of, quote, light-blooming phenomenon and its familiar but always bone-chilling fire sound. So this is, I think it's a funny thing. It keeps coming back. Mm-hmm. So whenever someone leaves the Bardo, this is what happens. There's no explanation of what that is.
Okay.
All we know is it's bone chilling and there's some kind of light blooming and there's a fire sound.
Fire sound? Okay.
One word, fire sound.
Crackly.
There are some commonalities.
It seems like not the most dramatic. I guess fires can roar. So that's Lincoln's son that is doing all that.
This okay.
Main charactering.
Yeah, I should note that this is a huge spoiler because this is near the end of the book. So This is, if you want to read the book, maybe you
it's
know,
all
come
good.
Back
I was
to
only
this.
Half listening, so the only people fucked are my listeners.
I could kind of tell. This is the main book for Western audiences on Tibetan Buddhism, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which was an inspiration for Lincoln's book, or sorry, Saunders' book. Because the author was an American anthropologist who published his findings in 27. And because...
This is Evans Wentz?
Yeah, Evans Wentz. Because the actual text is from the 8th century Tibet, which, by the way, the author never visited.
Oh, okay. Because I was wondering, like, his name is W.Y. Evans Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of makes it look more mysterious. But it's probably like William...
Yeah.
York. Evans went.
He actually adopted, I can't remember, I think it was the Evans was his mother's maiden name.
Okay.
He adopted when he went, I think it was to Wales. So he's like, he's researching.
What's his ethnic background?
I don't know, man.
Tiptoeing.
Just look it up on Wikipedia.
well, he's half Griffin if we look it up on Wikipedia.
Yes. Well, he did have horns, to be fair, so...
Oh, my God. Oh,
and
shit,
hooves.
That's racist right
and
there.
And hooves.
whatever hooves are, race hooves he is, racist, we right? are not saying that, that those people have horns and hooves, please.
So... But he's kind of like one of these world travelers going around finding all these world myths and religions and trying to tie them together based on this theosophy... belief mm-hmm. and background. So anyway, because of some of the problematic nature of that, I wanted to just start this out by pulling some basic explanations of the Bardo from a book which was actually published in the 90s by a Tibetan Lama living in Britain. So his name is Soyal Rinpoche, or Rinpoche, and his book is a slight variation called the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying.
It's the same book. But
it was kind of a response. Because the thing is, so like the Tibetan Book of the Dead, this is an English book based on the Tibetan book, the Bardo Total.
Okay.
This is what the Western audiences are familiar with, but in Tibet it's unknown, this book.
This version of
this this version. So,
but the book it comes from is known.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are lots of different... I don't know to what extent this is true, but my understanding is that the Tibetan book is used throughout life, but it's also used for people who are dying and people who have died. And it's read over the body to help them through the bardo.
Okay. It's like, hey, now that you're dead, remember.
Yeah, like encouraging. Don't get caught in the bardo. Not just getting caught, but like there's a lot of decisions and there's a lot of things, even just slight, like one negative thought can send you into a bad reincarnation. So it's like really guiding the people, like, remember to stay focused. Don't be tempted by...
Dude, I would be so fucked.
Oh, I would too. Yeah.
Especially if I went to a place where I couldn't have negative thoughts. That's all I'd have.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing about Buddhism, right? Like, one of the things, don't get trapped in negative cycles of thinking. And this takes it to the next step where it's like, if you are used to negative cycles of thinking, like... Get ready for the afterlife because it's going to be fucked up.
Oh, that's an interesting concept of... this is bardo, so this isn't hell. So after you leave the bardo, do we know what happens to you? Is it like heaven and hell?
So I should mention there are actually different bardos.
Okay.
And the one that's commonly known in the West is just the space between death and the next life.
Okay.
Right? But there are actually...
So it's like a lobby where you're waiting to be reincarnated.
Sort of. I mean, different bardos, and actually, bardo, the word itself can mean just any transitional period. So technically, there are bardos within life.
Okay.
And there are multiple bardos within death as well. Different stages of the process.
Can all of life be a bardo? Because sometimes it be feeling like that, man. With our president.
You're not talking about Lincoln?
Yeah, I'm talking about Lincoln getting shot in the face. Uh-huh. A little sidebar, but you know how like Elon Musk is saying that whatever, I'll save it for another episode.
I was going to say, can we have an episode without Elon Musk?
No, he's the fucking president.
The future president.
Yeah. Maybe.
So anyway, the translation of the bardo total, the whole title would be the great liberation through hearing in the bardo.
Okay.
And so the idea is that you're being read this book and that just hearing it can help you to better place yourself coming out of it. So this is a part of a large cycle of teachings handed down by the master Padmasambhava. And by the way, these writings were apparently hidden for 6 centuries, just like under trees and under rocks and like in caves. And then they were discovered in the 14th century by Karma Lingpa, who is, I think, at least by some, considered a reincarnation of the original author. So it is a kind of a guidebook or a travelogue for the after-death states.
Like Sexy Barcelona or something like that.
What?
Like Sexy Barcelona or Sexy Europe. Oh, yeah. Europe.
Uh-huh. That tell you all the hot clubs to go to. And yeah, exactly.
I actually found a book called Sexy Europe when I was living in Europe at one of the places I was renting that was like a student residence. And it was pretty awesome. Like, it was just, I mean, I never read the book, but it was just a nice, like...
But you had it on your shelf?
I still have it. The cover came off of it, but what I like about it... And by the way, you finished your first page, right?
First page, complete.
Jesus Christ.
How many were
that
there?
That wasn't all my fault.
The bardos can be broken down into 4 realities. The natural bardo of this life... As you were just saying, so from birth to death is considered a bardo. The painful bardo of dying, which lasts from the beginning of the process of dying right up until the end of what's known as the inner respiration. This in turn culminates in the dawning of the nature of mind, what we call ground luminosity. So this is another one of those recurring things.
just my brain is hollow right now.
Yeah, so the this clear light or ground luminosity, these come back in whichever translation constantly. And so to me, Saunders was kind of
playing
maybe
that.
Referencing and playing on that a little bit. Like, we don't really know what it is,
yeah,
but it's important.
Yeah.
The luminous bardo of Dharmata, this is another bardo, which encompasses the after-death experience of the radiance of the nature of mind, the luminosity or clear light which manifests as sound, color, and light, and the karmic bardo of becoming, which lasts right up until we take on a new birth. He talks a little about uncertainty and paranoia. And by the way, so now I'm pulling from the Rinpoche Tibetan Book of Living and Dying.
Talks which is the response to the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Yeah, so my sense is that he wanted to be, you know, because there are problems with the Evans-Wentz translation. He wanted to be truer to the original.
Well, I mean, he's got horns.
Yeah, I mean...
You're so uncomfortable.
We're gonna still insist on that.
Hey, we don't know what race he is. We can say whatever we want. Stereotype a non ethnic person. Well, it's a very white name.
That's why we're doing.
We're pretty
this.
Safe.
Yeah. The fact that he's at least half Welsh, I think, is the reason why we're.
Yeah, yeah.
So, punch up. I think you'll be excited to hear a little about uncertainty and paranoia, about which we can both relate.
Okay,
I would say. The uncertainty which already pervades everything now becomes even more intense, even more accentuated after we die, and it will be multiplied by 7.
Okay, so, and it's sort of like when you're in a dream and you, like, are paranoid, it creates a role for that, or like an entity.
Well, there's a lot of overlaps. And in fact, dreaming is also considered one of the more like minor bardos.
Of course it is. Life. I mean, these guys just came up with a word and they're like, oh, you like cheese? That's a bardo.
I just watched something that was exactly like that. What was it? Oh, I think it was Your Name. Have you seen the animation Your Name?
No.
There's something very similar into that where they talk about tying threads around. Anyway, it's kind of interesting. It was talked about as being like Oscar worthy of in the animation category, although I don't think it was nominated, but it's the Japanese animation.
Okay.
Anyway.
Is it manga-ish or?
It's not action-packed. It's kind of a drama.
Yeah, but I'm saying like style-wise.
How do you define manga style?
Just the kind of stuff you would find in a manga. Like, girl, boy.
Love story?
Love stories are mangas, too.
Okay.
I just mean, like, typical Japanese cartoon style. Which I hope is not stereotyping cartoon styles. But, you know, like, I mean... Yeah, I think we're talking about the same thing. My question is more: does it break away from that sort of style, or is it kind of, you know?
It didn't feel like, if you're familiar with Miyazaki style, in terms of the animation, it's maybe not such a huge difference from that. I don't know if you would call that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That's Asian.
But the music, terrible. The
really?
Music in this movie, it would actually be. We gave it 2 stars. We would have given it maybe 4 stars without the bad music. So that's my criticism.
And you're talking about your wife when you say we, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well,
I just want people to know that you're not fucking
the royal we.
You know, we.
When I critique movies and grade them.
Or that you rated them on my behalf. You know, Javier, we rated it 2 stars. Uh-huh.
Just
I didn't know that. I hadn't even watched it, but that sounds about right.
So, just so people don't tune out, there is mention of Richard Gere coming up. So just stay tuned, people. All right.
Is there Bordeaux of gerbils? Poor man. Poor man. It's never gone away.
Wait, what? Gerbil? There's a real story about gerbils?
What world do you fucking live in? You've managed to live in a bardo where you've missed...
Wait.
When you were a kid.
Is this like... Are we going in an Eddie Murphy direction with...
Yeah, this is like a super homophobic thing that kids used to say about Richard...
The Streisand effect?
No, I don't think you've ever fought it. I mean... Thank goodness he didn't find it, because I think the Streisand effect would have been strong on that one. But wait, do you know what I'm saying?
I have some vague recollection, but...
So you didn't live under a rock. You're not an alien from outer space.
I did live under a rock, but, you know, I mean, occasionally people would lift the rock and then give and me then stuff tell you, and tell me that, about pop culture.
That
and,
Richard Gere used to stick gerbils up his ass, allegedly, according to 14-year-old
kids. Who started this
kids.
Rumor?
I don't know.
Was it actually a 14-year-old kid who started that?
It has to be, because, you know, I don't know. Maybe it made some kid uncomfortable how he felt about Richard Gere. He's okay. Like, that guy sticks gerbils
you
up
his
ass.
You know who I think started this rumor? China. That's good.
Shit, dude. You're going for broke.
We just lost all our listeners in China.
We mostly lost our white liberal listeners.
We're
going
to lose everyone eventually. Yeah. It's fine.
Page two.
Halfway through page two. So one of the concepts is that the ultimate release, Parinirvana, dawns only at death. So there's...
That's a good band name, Parinirvana.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
If, like, for a band that's never going to succeed.
Yeah.
You know, like an underground...
Just be upfront about stealing from Nirvana, like, yeah. No one else is.
Like the shitty Beatles in Wayne's World?
Three Doors Down, or whoever, like...
No, Three Doors Down has nothing to do with shitty Beatles.
Not Beatles, Nirvana. I feel like...
Do you remember the that scene in Wayne's World where he's like, who's playing tonight? The shitty Beatles. Is that a, are they good, or is that just a clever name?
We were speaking about dreaming earlier. Very few people can recall these stages of the bardo similar to dreaming. Like, it's one thing to remember your dreams, but it's very hard to recall the moment before you start dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of this practice is like honing your meditation and concentration skills so that you can potentially access these things.
Have you ever gotten into lucid dreaming and whatnot?
I had a friend give me some kind of herbal thing that was supposed to help with that.
Uh-huh.
And it
and then you woke up
I woke up with
pain?
Terrible. My lungs were burning, yeah. And my eyes were bleeding.
He poisoned you. So did you like did it help you lucid dream?
No.
Did it make you feel sick for real or no?
No.
Okay. it's taking
like,
random.
It's
herbal
like mugwort or something. It had a very what is that like kids fantasy movie series? The where he rides on a broomstick.
Oh, Harry Potter.
Yeah, it had a very hot.
What? Who are you? My mother.
I was living under a rock, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is actually a very similar concept to what's called the bardo body, or the desire body, or the thought body, or the mind body. And this is the thing that, you know, after you leave your physical body, you're kind of floating around for part of this.
I'm sorry, but the desire body is my body.
No, that's...
I like that you went to correct me.
I had this dream in college of where I was meditating naked in a park.
I'm already excited.
And I was really into it.
Uh-huh.
And then I opened my eyes and another version of myself walked up to me, like all cocky. And I just like imploded. Knowing that there was another version of myself that I was not unique, it just like ruined everything for me. I just packed up my stuff and went home at that point. And I've always wondered what this is about. Like,
yeah, I think it's pretty on point. I mean, shit. Yeah. To the point that you stress over it.
Well, I'm still stressed about it. You know,
if anybody does anything remotely, like I think earlier today you were telling me that someone took pictures or that people were... A spot that you took pictures at became popular recently, and now you feel like a poser, even though you took pictures before everybody started picturing there.
No, I don't feel like a poser. I felt, because they were photographing in kind of like a lower income working class neighborhood, It was like a mirror on me photographing that, which I had done like a year ago.
Oh, okay.
And then I felt this pang of like, oh shit, that's kind of gross to see from the outside.
You know? So like you're on safari watching.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I felt.
Yeah.
But I realized in watching little clips of the little Buddha, there's a scene where Keanu Reeves encounters himself meditating.
Uh-huh.
And that's it's basically a good best self, worst self. And he kind of like defeated his worst self. I wonder if I just got that dream from watching that movie and then forgot.
Oh, you had seen it before?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure I saw it before.
Huh.
Anyway.
Bardo.
So during the first few weeks of the Bardo, and by the way, the Bardo, you could be there for like up to 49 days.
Mm-hmm.
Some people get stuck there for forever, but I think the average is...
Like some people end up in college for way too long.
I think the average is...
Hey, dude, welcome to the Bardo, man! It's great! Nah, you don't have to go on! Who wants to reincarnate? You can bone all the ladies.
This could be from the George Saunders book, actually. Oh, yeah? But
this is Lincoln?
A little bit less, like, fraternity-like, but...
Uh-huh. I was doing a fraternity guy?
Like a surfer frat. No, like if this was a Santa Barbara frat, yeah.
No, I was doing like a fucking East Coast frat too, and like then just generic.
No, you said totally. No one but surfers say totally.
Totally. I say totally. You know what I hate though? Totes.
Toads?
Not toads. Totes.
Toast? What are totes?
Totes, like totally.
Oh, totes. Yeah, I hate that too. I thought you meant like tote bags.
I hate tote bags, bro.
So every 7 days, the dead person is compelled to experience death all over again, whether it's positive or negative. So this thing of reading the book to the dead, mm-hmm. it goes on for 49 days. I think just in case they haven't found their way out. Mm-hmm. Like it's possible you could on the first day... find your way out and be good. I don't know how the reader or the friend in that situation
would know.
So yeah, maybe they just to be safe, they read for 49 days.
But that's such a specific number.
It is a specific number.
Because we're people that have 10 digits, and so we tend to think in tens.
Yeah, but sevens are kind of a symbolic thing, right? So it's...
So 49, okay. It's a multiple.
It's how many weeks is that?
I don't know.
It's more than two.
49 days?
49 days. That's like 7 weeks, right?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
It's a long-ass time to be sitting there.
Wouldn't it be 48 days? No, it's 49. You're right. Because it's... Yeah.
The first 21 days are the most important time for the living to help the dead find their way. They wait there until they can connect with their future parents. The only exception is if you have such a strong karma that it just sweeps you into your next birth,
mm-hmm.
or if you have such a strong constitution or karma or whatever that you can attain Buddhahood, and then you can skip entirely what's called samsara or the cycle of rebirth. And that's kind of a goal, is to, if not avoid the cycle of rebirth altogether,
mm-hmm.
at least position yourself so that you'll be reborn as someone capable of getting higher in the next life.
Okay.
So in other words, not like someone who's not going to have a spiritual capacity, and certainly not an animal, because then you're just stuck.
Oh, that's right, because you could just turn into animals. How do they weigh animals' karma? I wonder. It seems like karma is out the window when you're an animal, because you just got to kill. Huh. I know I don't. This is just me postulating. I'm sure there's some logic behind it, but intuitively, it just seems kind of crazy.
Let's not forget that there are, you know, dogs that save lives. There have been cats that have saved lives. I don't know if you've been on YouTube recently, but.
Oh my God. Well, please tell me.
This is one place where Evans Wentz probably differs from the original intentions. Uh-huh. Of the Bardo Totem. Okay, so this is part of the controversy relating to theosophy.
Okay.
Is that in a lot of these texts, you know, they pretty clearly suggest that it's possible to be reborn as an animal.
Mm.
he interprets that as speaking symbolically, not literally. And he objects to the implication that a higher life form like humans could come back as an animal. This is
as many people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is a basic thing in theosophy, or specifically the secret doctrines, which I'll get into in a minute. So this is from Wiki about Evans Wentz. Actually, a quote. He was not familiar with Tibetan Buddhism, and his view of Tibetan Buddhism was fundamentally neither Tibetan nor Buddhist, but theosophical and Vedantist. Vedantist being somewhat based on some part of Hinduism. So he was very familiar with Hindu concepts, and he kind of like put them onto
these
readings. Yeah.
Like he was baking a cake.
Exactly. Yeah. And now, since this is like the number one familiar Western understanding of Tibetan Buddhism, there's a lot of misconceptions about
Buddhism because it's
the real thing.
Because it's
based on what
Hindu.
He did. Yeah. So he introduced a terminology into the translation, which was largely derived from Hinduism as well as his theosophical beliefs, contrary to the general belief spread in the West by Evans Wentz. And this is where it differs a little from what I said earlier. It says the book is not read to people who are passing away, but is rather used during life by those who want to learn to visualize what will come after death. I don't know if it is or it isn't. I saw a documentary narrated by Leonard Cohen that showed them reading to a dead person. And I'm going to play an audio sample of that.
All right.
I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. Sering Sonam's widow makes this prayer not just for herself and her husband, but for all beings to be released from suffering. It's been 8 days since Sering Sonam died, but still he wanders in the bardo. Now he is seeing the wrathful deities, so it is a difficult time for him. Please continue to think of him kindly. Continue to offer prayers for him and encourage him. It will help him find his way.
In a 19... Oh, okay. So this is from the afterword of the book of the Tibetan Book of the Dead. This is the afterword is written by Donald S. Lopez Jr. In his 1915 essay, Thoughts for the Times on War and Death, Sigmund Freud wrote, "It is indeed impossible to imagine our own death. And whenever we attempt to do so, we can perceive that we are in fact still present as spectators." 4 years later, the American theosophist Walter Evans Wentz, traveling in the Himalayas on funds from his real estate investments in Florida.
He's the whitest guy we've ever talked about. He does have horns. The only acceptable microaggression.
So, just to be fair,
I love Florida. In small, I just can't stick to every fucking surface.
The humidity is nice for a while.
Oh,
for like
no,
a week or
you're
two.
Not a sweaty boy like me.
That's true.
I'm yeah. I, one time, I was at a pool hall, and someone pointed out that I had sweated a Wu-Tang symbol on my back. And I was inside.
That's nothing to fuck with.
No. Yeah, no, that heat is nothing to fuck with for sure.
So he chanced upon a Tibetan text.
Also, this can be 3 episodes.
You're telling me to read faster, is that right? He chanced upon a Tibetan text and asked the English teacher of the Maharaja's boy school in Gangtok, Sikkim, to translate it for him.
In Gangtok?
Gangtok.
That's the language, right? Or is that...
No, this is a place. I guess it's a city and a region.
No, because my brain hears Gangtok. Like how...
Yeah.
So I needed to understand what that was.
Uh-huh.
So it's a city?
As far as I know, yeah.
Okay.
So one of the things that was discussed is that at that time, in the 20s, there was a lot of interest in death and dying, like in relation to the world wars. lot of interest in this kind of spiritualism at that time.
Yeah, and seances and stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, so apparently Tibet was, and I think to be fair, it still is, just in the way it's portrayed in movies, thought of as this, like I said earlier, this pure, unaffected little island of culture where these secrets remain. They're not spoiled by Europe or other colonies because it's never been colonized by the European country. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff was destroyed by China, but it still maintains this kind of like...
Why China always tripping, dog?
I'm just going to say... I've met a lot of great Chinese people. Are you gonna I actually speak a little Chinese.
Do you?
Yeah, a little bit.
How many curse words?
I don't know.
You didn't.
Well,
you learned it in school then, huh? I can't believe that it's taken me this long to bring up the Free Tibet concert. Done. Move on.
Yeah. So, okay. So, like, one of the basic texts of theosophy is called this.
Yeah, just touch on it.
This text that was written by philosophy, published in 1888 by Helena Blavatsky. She claimed that its contents had been revealed to her by Mahatmas who had retained knowledge of humanity's spiritual history, knowledge...
Sorry. Mahatmas or what?
Okay. It's underlined. I didn't click on it.
All right. Fucking hyperlink. Hyperlink fail.
I just remember that Seinfeld episode with Gandhi where Elaine is like, the Mahatma?
I just thought it was his name. That's we're learning about my ignorance a lot on this episode.
There are many problematic things about this book, but one of the things is that there is this kind of this rejection of Darwinian concepts of evolution. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to some fairly far out.
And this is like a, let's call it an important book for about theosophy.
Yeah, my understanding is that it's kind of like the main text.
A Bible, maybe?
I don't know if theosophy's... I don't think it could be called a religion.
All right.
But whatever it is, this is one of the main things.
Just
but
took the air out of my sails, man.
She talks about anthropoid species, third race man. It gets into a lot of like racial superiority, inferiority stuff.
Right on.
This was part of the issue of how Evans-Wentz, you know, got into some problems. Because this is also, by the way, tied into Atlantis and some like very cosmic, futuristic sci-fi sounding, like a little bit Scientology-ish in suspected origins of the world.
They're all going to laugh at us when they're right. So this guy is a little bit ookie kooky.
This lady, yeah.
It's lady. So wait, so how does she tie into this again?
Okay, yeah, so...
So she wrote the book...
She wrote the book...
That I called the Bible, but you...
The quote-unquote Bible of Theosophy, which influenced Evans-Wentz to write this book.
So he was taking... He wasn't necessarily known to be racist, but he was taking stuff from a book of a person that had some pretty racial undertones.
Yeah, yeah. And he still, as a main concept and approach to his republishing or translating... of this Tibetan book, you know, that was part of his perspective was this whole thing of, this is symbolic speaking, we can't be reborn as animals, right? There's no way we can, like, the highest life form can be knocked down a couple notches. Mm-hmm. And so he actually put that in the context of Plato's Republic. So he, in Plato's Republic, there are reincarnations, not unlike the Bardo, where these different Greek heroes are choosing how they want to be reincarnated. Some of them choose animals, which are...
So they can get laid. I know that swan story.
Oh, yeah, the swan story.
Yeah.
But what was that about? He like.
I think Zeus turns himself into a swan so he can bone zone, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
So yeah, the author compares the use of animal birth to that in Plato's Republic. Greek heroes, Orpheus, chose to be a swan.
Oh, it's Orpheus.
So yeah, I just saw something. Orpheus hated women. I don't.
Oh, so this is, in this case, it wasn't to seduce somebody. I know that I'm pretty confident, enough to say it on our podcast, that there is a story where someone turns into an animal to try to seduce somebody.
Thamyris chose to be a nightingale, Ajax a lion, Agamemnon an eagle.
That's such a great name, Agamemnon.
Yeah, there aren't enough kids named Agamemnon these days.
I don't know, maybe it's sort of like Adolf.
Odysseus chose to be, quote, a private man who had no cares. Evans Wentz interprets this as all these animal choices are just like foils to Odysseus and his choice, because his choice is obviously like what you should choose. You should choose just to be some humble working class guy who's just like gonna go chill in his yard and barbecue.
So in this guy, so Evans is saying that they're symbolic. Yeah,
yep.
Sorry to interrupt you, but I found my answer. Leda and the Swan is a story and subject in art from Greek mythology in which the god Zeus, which is probably where I know it from because I've seen probably a million versions of this theme in Renaissance work.
Okay.
The god Zeus, in the form of a swan, seduces Leda. I can keep reading, but I just wanted to tell you I was right.
You're right. It's cool.
So nonchalant. Give me more!
So like this, you know, this book, the Tibetan Book of the Dead, had a major impact on Western audiences. A lot of references in different films and songs. It was introduced to Timothy Leary by Aldous Huxley.
That must have been a fun pair to hang out with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so according to Leary and his partners Metzer and Alpert, the Tibetan Book of the Dead is a key to the innermost recesses of the human mind and a guide for initiates and for those who are seeking the spiritual path of liberation. They construed the effect of LSD as a stripping away of ego defenses, finding parallels between the stages of death and rebirth in the Tibetan Book of the Dead and the stages of the psychological death and rebirth which Leary had identified during his research. So...
quote unquote, a lot of quotes here. Because I mean, he was definitely took it very seriously. But I mean,
what do you
that sounds just like a trip he had, and he was like, yeah, oh man, I tripped, I died, I came back. It sounds like he read the Book of the Dead and then had that experience more than like it was objective research being done.
Do you know what else they did?
What?
They wrote their own book.
Of the Dead?
Called The Psychedelic Experience, based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead.
Is that what that's based off of?
Yeah.
Well, it's not the electric Kool-Aid acid test. Did that come before or after?
Electric Kool-Aid?
Yeah.
I don't know. So here's a list of commonly reported physical sensations. Bodily pressure, which the Tibetans call earth sinking into water. Clammy coldness, followed by feverish heat, which the Tibetans call water sinking into fire. Body disintegrating or blown to atoms, called fire sinking into air. Pressure on head and ears, which Americans call rocket launching into space. Tingling in extremities.
And these are
this is
sensations
from,
that you have from LSD?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Feelings of body melting or flowing as if wax. Nausea, trembling or shaking. Beginning in pelvic regions and spreading up torso. These physical reactions should be recognized as signs heralding transcendence. Avoid treating them as symptoms of illness. Accept them, merge with them, enjoy them. Mild nausea occurs often with the ingestion of morning glory seeds or peyote, rarely with mescaline and infrequently with LSD or psilocybin. The symptoms are mental. The mind controls the sensation, and the subject should merge with the sensation, experience it fully, enjoy it, and having enjoyed it, let consciousness flow on to the next phase.
Don't tell me how to trip, bro.
It is usually more natural to let consciousness stay in the body. The subject's attention can move from the stomach and concentrate on breathing, heartbeat. If this does not free him from nausea, the guide should move the consciousness to external events, music, walking in the garden, etc. Another
this is all Bardo talk.
These are all from The Psychedelic Experience.
Uh-huh.
I've got a lot of different quotes here. Another typical and most rewarding phase of the first bardo involves ecstatic energy movement felt in the spine. The base of the backbone seems to be melting or seems on fire. If the person can maintain quiet concentration, the energy will be sensed as flowing upwards. Tantric adepts devote decades of concentrated...
Do that sentence again?
I don't know.
Tantric adepts.
Tantric adepts. People, that are people who are adept at tantric. Okay.
Yeah.
Devote decades
of... But do the sentence, because I want a clean one without an om.
They're called adepts or adepts.
Just read that fucking sentence again.
Can we keep this whole thing?
Yes. You fucking asshole.
Tantric adepts.
Fucking strangle you. Bart Simpson your ass, dude. Or Homer Simpson your ass.
Tantric adepts devote decades of concentrated meditation to the release of these ecstatic energies, which they call Kundalini, the serpent power.
I love how you got weak on power.
I just lost all control at that point.
You're like, lady.
One allows the energies to travel upwards through several ganglionic centers, in parentheses, chakras, to the brain, where they are sensed as a burning sensation in the top of the cranium. These sensations are not unpleasant to the prepared person, but on the contrary, are accompanied by the most intense feelings of joy and illumination. Ill-prepared subjects may interpret the experience in pathological terms and attempt to control it, usually with unpleasant results. The purpose of this part of the manual is to prepare the person for the choice points which arise during this stage. Strange sounds, weird sights, and disturbed visions may occur. These can awe, frighten, and terrify unless one is prepared. The experienced person will be able to maintain the recognition that all perceptions come from within, like with the real bardo, mm-hmm. and will be able to sit quietly, controlling his expanded awareness like a phantasmagoric, multi-dimensional television set.
That's another band name there.
The inexperienced and those to who or to whom ego control is important may find this passivity impossible. If you cannot remain inactive and subdue your will, then the one certain activity which can reduce panic and pull you out of hallucinatory mind games is physical contact with another person. Go to the guide or to another participant and put your head on his lap or chest.
That's not going to happen. I'm never tripping that hard.
Put your face next to his and concentrate on the movement and sound of his inspiration. Is it inspiration or... respiration. Breathe deeply and feel the air rush in and the sighing release.
It could be both. Either one applies. We're talking about LSD, man.
This is the oldest form of living communication. The brotherhood of breath.
Are you sure he wasn't doing Molly too?
It does sound a little...
It sounds like he's a little bit more euphoric than most people that trip acid. Not that I know anything about acid.
The guide's hand on your forehead may add to the relaxation. Contact with another participant may be misunderstood and provoke sexual hallucinations. For this reason, helping contact should be made explicit by pre-arrangement. Unprepared participants may impose sexual fears or fantasies on the contact. Turn them off. They are karmic illusory productions. The tender, gentle, supportive huddling together of participants is a natural development during the second phase. Do not try to rationalize this contact. Human beings, and for that matter, most all mobile terrestrial creatures, have been huddling together during long, dark, confused nights for several hundred thousand years. Breathe in and breathe out with your companions. We are all one. That's what your breath is telling you.
I don't think I would enjoy tripping with fucking Timothy Leary.
Well, you know he's, like, recording everything and taking notes.
Which yeah, he just sounds like such so a downer. Paranoid. I mean, I'm not the first person to say that, but yeah, it doesn't sound like a fun time. So many fucking rules. And, like, to just... Can you imagine how douchey a guide he is? It's all right. You're fine. He's like this weird hybrid of guru and scientist, which is... really irks me.
Yeah, well, I think all of these guys are that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? It's like...
Or like theosophists in general. Yeah, yeah. Attempting, but it's just like... It's like, dude, you're doing drugs, and then you're telling me that there's like a rhyme or reason to it. Like, no, you're just fucked up, man. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I know that there's a lot of spiritual stuff that happens with LSD, but to say that there's like an objective way that people trip is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. I'll just wrap this up by saying that the LSD version of this mm-hmm. was...
It's a lot more fun.
the inspiration for the Beatles song.
Which one?
Not the shitty Beatles either. The real Beatles.
the shitty Beatles? Which one? Lucy in the Sky?
No. Tomorrow Never Knows? So this is off Revolver.
Yeah. Yeah, I know that one. That's the one that has like all the weird audio.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's a little trippy.
Stuff.
Yeah,
yeah.
So Lennon wrote the song in 1966. They visited a bookshop. Lennon was looking for a copy of the Portable Nietzsche, but instead found the LSD book.
Uh-huh. Were they already eating it?
I don't know. But so the line in the song is, whenever in doubt, turn off your mind, relax, float downstream. That's from the book.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it says...
not dying.
Lennon bought the book, went home, took LSD, and followed the instructions exactly as stated in the book. Like A Hard Day's Night, the title was taken from one of Ringo Starr's malapropisms. Remember what a malapropism? In a television interview in 1964, Starr had uttered the phrase, "Tomorrow never knows." Okay, well, I'm gonna end this here.
Is this the end of your...
Of episode one, I think.
Well, I actually... One of the things that I was really... I wanted to know is, do you know where we can get acid? You got a hookup, right?
I mean,
come
if we go to San Francisco, I can walk with you to Golden Gate Park if you want.
No. All right. So so next episode, we'll be back on to discuss more Bordeaux.
And Bordeaux. Tell me
Freud,
how you really
what
feel.
The fuck? Get out of me.
And we'll finally get to Richard Gere, which I've been just using as a carrot this whole time.
Next episode, no gerbils. Hey guys, if you had fun, feel like you learned something, rate us, review us on iTunes, that helps us. And if you want to subscribe, that's actually very nice too. I'm at Javier Proenza on Instagram, and Seth is...
At Seth Lauer.
On Instagram. You gotta say on Instagram.
On Instagram.
There we go.